So I'm super excited to bring this lesson this morning. This is one of the last tours that I took while I was over in Israel, and that's what we're going to be discussing today. Now, I will preface this, that this I wanted this one to be the last one because this is the one that I was doing a lot of research on. And of course, as you're putting a lesson together, the more and more you put together, the bigger and bigger the lesson tends to be. I was talking to Roger about that this morning. And I do have a couple natural stopping points, so I'm not going to go until like 1 o'clock today. But if we need to, we'll break it down into different lessons. But I am excited today to talk about the salt sea. So there's a lot of things that we're going to be discussing today. I'm really excited that we recently got a new projector, so hopefully the images come out really well on this today. I have a lot of images because there's a lot of different topological things that are discussed in the Bible, and that I really want to bring those out in the lesson today. So I actually have more pictures of the area today than I do in the other lessons, because there's quite a bit of importance here when we're looking at this area. Now, this is standing on the shores of the Dead Sea, and I have it listed the Salt Sea here. I'll explain that here in just a second. But I'm standing here on the shores of the Dead Sea looking over into what would be Jordan today. So that would be the area of Jordan, just right across from here. I think I had mentioned that our friend at Fairborn, that was in the service, was stationed there in Jordan. And he's almost got this exact same picture looking into I'm actually standing in the West Bank, so looking this way. So we have pictures lined up exactly looking at us across from each other. We weren't there at the same time, but I did think it was pretty funny. When he was stationed there with the army, he wasn't actually allowed to come over to the other side. He was only allowed to be on that side, which is a lot heavier terrain on that side. So as I mentioned before, with the different tours that I went on, this is one of the last studies that we're going to be looking at today. We studied Nazareth, we studied the Sea of Galilee, we looked at the Jordan River, we studied about Jerusalem, and then today we're going to be looking at the Dead Sea. Now, some people have asked, especially with all of the things going on in Israel today and the Gaza Strip, they've asked me how close I was to that area, and I spent a lot of time in Tel Aviv, which is where that circle is right here. And I don't know if you can kind of see down here on the map, that is the Gaza Strip. That is where everything is happening with the war today. And if you were to map it out, I was roughly 57 miles from my hotel room to Gaza. But when I was at the Dead Sea, it's only 53 miles away. So that's not very far, especially remember that the whole country of Israel is about the size of New Jersey. So that's not very far. Everything is kind of there together. I did make several friends while I was there, and I have been texting them to see if they were okay. Some of them have been called into service, and some of them elected to be called into service. As we know that everybody in Israel is a member of their army there. In order to be a citizen there, you have to be to serve in their military and be trained. So they are over there. Now, I've had people ask me also how close I was to the West Bank. Well, in order to get to the Dead Sea, you have to go through the West Bank. So I did spend a lot of time in the West Bank. It is a little rough. If you have read anything about the West Bank or understand about the West Bank, it used to be the place that you didn't want to go to when you were over in Israel. And, of course, now Gaza is the place you don't want to be at when you're over there. There's not a lot of infrastructure, and they throw a lot of the trash over. And it was being bombed the day I was driving through there. So it's always been in turmoil. There was a lot going on that day that I was there. And then literally this fence behind my head is the separation of where you're allowed to go and where you're not allowed to go there at the West Bank. Now, if we were to take this a little bit further, I just want to show, again, kind of the topology of the land. So if you were standing in Jerusalem and you were going to make your way to the Dead Sea, this is what you would see. This is the plains of the Jordan. And we're going to get into this as we look into these verses. I wanted to show these images first because as we start looking through some of the verses today, Think about what these areas look like. It was covered in camels. I did not expect that. I didn't expect to see a camel, so driving down the road when I saw a camel, I was like, did I just see a camel? And our tour guide, her name was Hava. And Hava in Hebrew is actually Eve. That's the name for Eve, so her name was Eve, and it's Hava. She was like, yeah, didn't you know that all of this land is covered in camels? I had no idea. So I found that interesting. Now, with the lovely technology we have today, I can pinpoint exactly where I took these pictures. So today, as we talk about the specific area, since you know we do have metadata and GPS data and everything linked to our photos, I'm able to map out exactly 100% right where I took each of those photos. And as you can see where we journeyed from. This is Jerusalem coming up over to the Dead Sea and down. So all of the pictures that I'm going to be using today are pretty much here from, this is where the Jordan River dumps into the Dead Sea, and then how everything is connected throughout the Dead Sea. This is Masada. I'm not going to do a study today about Masada. Masada is not in the Bible, so I didn't really want to put a lot of effort on that. But remember, that's Solomon's, this was an area that was built by the king of when Jesus was born, and his name just left me. He built a lot of great, massive areas, even Syria and Tyre and the docks and everything there. But this was the location of where he built a huge palace. Then that's the same palace during 70 AD where all of the Jews fled to get away from Jerusalem. They fled to Masada because it was fortified. Then as it was fortified, the Roman army, of course, wanted all of the Jews of that time dead. So they actually built a mountain to get up to it. And it's fascinating to see a man-made mountain because the Roman soldiers basically dug until they built a mountain up to take all of the Jews out. So fascinating area, but I didn't touch on that. That is where it is at, but we're not going to get into that today. Again, as you're going throughout this area, I do find it fascinating, the amount of camels that were there, and I couldn't imagine waking up in the morning saying, hey, honey, I'm going to go get a cup of coffee and jump on your camel and go down to the store. This is a camel parking lot. Well, there were several of those throughout there. You can grab a parking lot and park your camel. As mentioned before, we've actually done a map study where we've looked at all of the different types of topologies in the area, and especially what types of vegetation was there. We talked about the sheep in the area and about the herdsmen. That is still true today. However, this is about at sea level, and when we go down to the Dead Sea, we're going to be going down 1,500 feet. So from here, think of about a reverse mountain. This is the top of it, where you have some greens, there's some grass, there's some trees. You slowly start going down. There is a lot of shepherds. There were shepherds just about everywhere with flocks, different goats, sheep, cattle, all over the mountaintops and the areas. And then as you continue your way down to where the Dead Sea meets the land, you have nothing. Nothing. Now, all of the images I'm using today are ones that I've taken. So these are all pictures that I've taken of this area. There's only one area that I'll mention that that I didn't take these pictures. So let's get into these topics today. I just wanted to show these images so we can kind of frame our minds around where these locations are. I will mention throughout this, there are some of the things that have happened today that were from this region. The region that I took this picture from is where they found the Dead Sea Scrolls. So keep that in mind as well, because I'm down at the base of the Dead Sea, and the Dead Sea Scrolls were found in this region. The region that where the Dead Sea Scrolls is found is actually protected by a group now, so they don't really allow anybody into that area because it is land that is owned by the local inhabitants there, and they don't want any trespassing. So let's look at the Salt Sea or Dead Sea today. We're going to look at Sodom and Gomorrah because it's kind of hard to talk about this area without looking at those. And then we may touch on En Gibeon. Now, that may not ring a bell right away, but if we were to look at this a little bit later, that story will definitely ring a bell where that's at. That is in this location. We may or may not get to that today, but I do want to mention that that is one of the topics. So let's take a look at the Dead Sea. The Dead Sea, of course, is 1,400 feet below sea level. It's the lowest elevation on Earth. So it's the lowest elevation. The Dead Sea itself is almost 1,000 feet deep. It's 9 times, or some, most people say 10 times, it's 9.6 times, saltier than the ocean. It's the harshest environment in which plants and animals cannot flourish at this time. It's pretty much that. And the Dead Sea is 31 miles long and 9 miles across. So when I brought up the picture earlier where we showed the Dead Sea, that is the length of it. Now, if we were to take a look at the Dead Sea, it's not mentioned, the Dead Sea is not mentioned in the Bible. It's mentioned as the Salt Sea, so that's why I've been going back and forth with the name. Also, in ancient Hebrew writings, it was considered the Sea of Death. So you can kind of see where we get the Dead Sea out of that. But again, that is not in the Bible. Most of the writings refer to it as the Salt Sea. And specifically, it is mentioned 9 times in the Bible. So that's the Dead Sea behind us. You can see this camel just walking around. So, nine times in the Bible. So, Genesis 14 and 3, which we're going to look at here in a minute. Numbers 34, 3, 34 and 12. Deuteronomy, Joshua. I did want to mention that it's oftentimes used to set boundaries. So, in Numbers 34 and 12 and Joshua 15 and 5, it's used to set the boundary of the locations of where they are. So, it's used as a reference guide to figure that out. Now, I did want to mention I got to do one of my lifetime goals is I did swim in the Dead Sea. I did get to go swimming. This is the location that they took us to swim at the Dead Sea. I think I've mentioned to others before about my trip over there, about how it only rains 4 inches a year in Jerusalem, and it rained all 4 inches while I was there. Also, it was a cold snap. And it was about 60 degrees when I went to the Dead Sea, which was the coldest that they've ever had. All of the locals had huge fires burning, and they were wearing big sweatshirts. So it was only me and about 6 other German people that decided to go swim in the Dead Sea because nobody else could take the cold. It was funny because everybody thought I was German there. I don't know if I'm German, but I looked like the other people that were swimming, and I carry my own insulation, so me we were fine in the water. I wasn't going to pass up an opportunity to swim in the Dead Sea. I was a little bit hard-headed, though. I did want to mention this. I did bring in a chunk of the salt from the Dead Sea. I should have brought it again today, but I did reach down into the water, and I broke out a chunk of salt from the Dead Sea, and I brought it home with me. Imagine billions of tiny razor blades. That's essentially what the rocks are like under that water. And they kept telling me that I had to put shoes on to go into the water, and I didn't believe them. So my feet really got cut up that day, but I can see why, because, I mean, that imagine just billions of salt crystals, and that's what you're walking on. And it is almost impossible to drown. The buoyancy of being in the salt is very interesting. And normally, as you can imagine, the place that I went to go swimming there, it was set up to serve thousands and thousands of people at a time, and there was only 9 of us that got in there. We were in a bus that probably held about 90. We were the only people in there. So it was a lot of fun. As you can see, the clouds were coming over. It was coming from the Jerusalem area, and it had just rained there. But it doesn't rain very often at the Dead Sea. So it was kind of cool to see that. I guess that's kind of a rare sighting, because I think that made the colors come out a little bit better, too. So let's take a look at the very first verse that we're going to look at, where the Salt Sea is specifically mentioned here in Genesis 14. And I want to kind of describe some of the areas around this. So here in Genesis 14 and 3, it says, "All these join together in the valley of Siddim." That is the Salt Sea. Okay? So we have the Valley of Siddim at the Salt Sea. "Now the Valley of Siddim was full of asphalt pits, and the king of Sodom and Gomorrah fled." right? Because this is the battle of the kings. This is where kingdoms came together in Genesis 13. And now we're having this battle of the kings. And I just labeled it battle of the kings just to kind of give you an idea of what that area looks like. I didn't add the pictures today because I didn't think it was fitting. But if you go to the Battle of the Kings area, there's a big sculpture of Elvis. So that is the Battle of the Kings area. And it says, and the kings from Sodom and Gomorrah fled. Some fell, and the remainder fled to the mountains. So that would have been the mountains behind us here. Then they took all the goods of Sodom and Gomorrah and all their provisions, and they went their way, and also took Lot, Abraham's brother, son who dwelt in Sodom, and his family. I don't know why it's cut off there. But they took Adam's brother's son, Lot, Abraham's brother's son, who dwelt in Sodom, and his family. So, we have this issue happening. This is where Abraham went and rescued Lot. You know, he took a group together, went and rescued Lot. But Lot still decided to go back to the area of Sodom and Gomorrah, even after he was saved from this issue. Now, I wanted to point out some things we may not have thought of before, because you may have studied about Lot, Abraham, this battle happening. But I wanted to point out a few things. The area around the Dead Sea is very volatile. Things change constantly. There has been companies come in and build millions of dollars worth of resorts and buildings, and guess what? They have all fallen under the ground. Almost every road has collapsed, bridge has collapsed. I was just watching a review of the Dead Sea last night, and it shows a group of people driving over a bridge. Well, that bridge is completely gone today. I have pictures of where it's just fallen into the earth. The way it normally works is a lot of the salt water and the salinity is actually up under the area here, which would be the Valley of Siddim. And as that water evaporates or comes out of that area, it just leaves massive sinkholes. So this whole area looked like it had been bombed. Just huge. And you're not allowed to walk out on any of this because they don't know how deep those are, and a lot of people just fall through. So imagine watching an army flee into this area and then the ground is just falling out from underneath of them. And that's what I was thinking about as I was reading this verse, because I don't know if I had ever really considered that before. When you think about this verse where some of them, you know, the asphalt pits, and some of them fled, and several of them fell there. They fell through those pits. Like I mentioned, roads, resorts, buildings, they've all fallen in. I think this was like a 3 or 4 story building at one point. Right? And you're only seeing the top of it. It has just fallen straight through the ground. So that valley area would have looked something like this. That's what it looks like today. And again, you're not allowed to walk out on any of this. There's big signs because you have that fear of falling through. Now that we kind of got an idea of the land, and we've talked a little bit about the Dead Sea, let's actually take a look about where they think Sodom and Gomorrah is. Now, as you know, we don't really know where it's at. And if you look up some historical references, and if you study this out, there's a lot of possible locations where it can be. Some historical references has it down here at the bottom. Some has it up at the top. This would be up at the top of the Dead Sea, the Valley of Siddim. And then sometimes it has Sodom and Gomorrah on the lower sides of the Dead Sea. It's very hard to understand where it is. They haven't been able to find too many ruins. So that's been kind of hard for them to keep up. Now, there are ruins in the area, but they do not date back to this time. And hopefully, as we go throughout this study today, we'll kind of see maybe why that is. Now, I believe that there's three, or actually maybe four, ideas of where it's at. It's either in the northern area, the southern area, under the Dead Sea. There's some people that believe that it's under the Dead Sea. And there's also others that believe that this was just a story and it actually was never a city. So there's some ideas that are out there. I'm going to share some information of some studies that I've done to maybe narrow it down just a little bit more. But let's read about where Lot was. And maybe from where, if we read from where Lot was, we might be able to drill down where these locations were. So, if we look at Genesis 13, 1 through 12, we get a little bit better understanding of possibly where these locations are. So, now that we've looked at the land, the layout of where things are, let's look at, starting in verse 5 of Genesis 13. And that says, "And Lot also went with Abraham, had flocks and herds and tents. And the land was not able to bear them, that they might dwell together, for their substance was great, so that they could not dwell together. And there was a strife between the herdsmen of Abraham's cattle and the herdsmen of Lot's cattle, and the Canaanite of the Perizzites dwelt in the land." So we have everything that Abraham had, everything that Lot had. We also had other people in this area. So there's not enough land to kind of hold them here. So Abraham said to Lot, "Let there be no strife, I pray, between me and thee, and between my herdsmen and thy herdsmen, for we are brethren. Is it not the whole land before thee? Spare it thyself, I pray thee, from me. If thou wilt take the left hand, then I will go the right. And if thou depart the right hand, I will go the left." And Lot lifted up his eyes, and behold, the plain of the Jordan, that it was well watered everywhere before the Lord destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah. Now, if you were reading this for the very first time, you're like, what God's going to do? Because it's the very first time that those are mentioned, and in order for them to be mentioned, it says that God's going to destroy it. So now, if you're reading the Bible for the first time, you've read that God's going to destroy these two cities. It's kind of foreshadowing what's going to come up. So even as the garden of the Lord, so this is like the Garden of Eden. He's looking out and seeing all of this well-watered land. And like the land of Egypt. Well, keep that in your mind. The land of Egypt. Do we think that when you think about Egypt, do you think about something that's being well-watered? We'll think about that here in a minute. "And thou comest up to Zoar. Then Lot chose himself the plain of the Jordan. And Lot journeyed east. And they separated themselves, the one from the other. Abraham dwelt in the land of Canaan, and Lot dwelt in the city of the plains, and pitched his tent towards Sodom." Okay? So Lot chose for himself the plain of the Jordan. Remember, the Jordan River dumps into the Dead Sea, so that would only be from the north part, because that's where the Jordan River comes in. So if you think about this, this would probably be the north part of the Dead Sea, if that is that plain. And then he pitched his tent towards Sodom. So I don't know if he traveled there and pitched his tent, you know, maybe south towards the rest of the Dead Sea, if that's where they think that Sodom and Gomorrah was. Now, when I was mentioning this before, we do have reference kind of back to the Garden of Eden about how well water it was, and also the lands of Egypt. So if you were to take a satellite image of this area, right? This is Egypt. Just kind of look at how green Egypt is, right? We've talked about the fjords of the rivers and everything coming through here. And then right now we're talking about this area. Right? Just from the current day satellite image, you can see that one place is very well watered and one, nothing. Also, I'm going to point this out just because I have this image up. Take a look at the color. You see how this even looks like a different color than the rest of all of this area? I want to bring that up because I think there's an important point that we can touch on here in a little bit. Because not only is it not well watered today, but this is what it looks like. I mean, nothingness. Nothing. There's no plants. There's nothing. And to give you a little idea about where I'm taking this picture from, I'm actually standing on the top of Masada, looking out through across the plains.
These are palm trees that were planted for a parking lot. So I'm really, 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 really high up. Those are palm trees. That's a bus right here. This is actually a Roman soldier encampment about where they camped before they went and destroyed Masada. But look how much that just stretches out. Nothing. So let's read about what happened to Sodom and Gomorrah. So now we see this over here in Genesis 19. So we looked at Genesis 13 where we have Lot and Abraham parting ways. We had Genesis 14 where we mentioned about the fight that happened, this war. And then now in Genesis 19, when God has just had enough of what was happening in Sodom and Gomorrah, if we all remember the story, right, Abraham said, let me go find 50 people. And God was like, okay, if you find 50 people, I won't destroy it, right? And he works his way down to basically Lot. And the reason I'm saying basically Lot is it's because God remembered Abraham and he saved Lot. I'm not sure how that story lays out if Lot wasn't related to Abraham, if Lot's life would have been saved or not. I don't know. Genesis 19. Let's start in 24. Then the Lord raised brimstone and fire on Sodom and Gomorrah from the Lord out of the heavens. So he overthrew those cities, all of the plain, all of the inhabitants of the city, and what grew on the ground. It is just wiped out. So then we have Lot here. His wife looked back behind him, and she became a pillar of salt. Now, there's a lot to be said with this. I've looked up some of the Hebrew writings and things, and it said that she looked back longing to go back, wanting to go back to that area. It wasn't that she just looked, but there was like a longing or wanting to return back to the area. And she became a pillar of salt. Now, there is several things over in the Dead Sea where salt will build up and almost make a stalactite that comes up out of the ground, and they call them Lot's wives because the salt will just kind of come up in stacks. So if you're ever interested, pull up some pictures of Lot's wife because there is salt that piles up. And Abraham went early in the morning to the place where he had stood before. So again, if the Dead Sea and the plains are at the lowest elevation on earth, pretty much anywhere up on top of it, you are looking down into that valley. From Tel Aviv, I was in a skyscraper and I could see the Dead Sea. That's 53 miles away. So if you were even closer, let's say if you were in Jerusalem or in the area of Canaan, no matter what hilltop you're on, it looks down into the Dead Sea. So we have Abraham looking down into this area. So he went there in the morning and he looked down. And then he looked towards Sodom and Gomorrah and towards the land of the plain. And he saw and behold the smoke of the land which went up like the smoke of a furnace. And it came to pass when God destroyed the city of the plain that God remembered Abraham and set Lot in the midst of the overthrow when he overthrew the cities in which Lot had dwelt. So that was what I was mentioning. God remembered Abraham and saved Lot and his family. So let's talk just a little bit about this, and I hope you guys don't mind. I'm going to just take a minute or two to talk about brimstone, just a little bit. So brimstone, according to the Easton Bible Dictionary, defines brimstone as an inflammable material substance found in quantities on the shore of the Dead Sea. Again, if you were to walk around there, you would see them just about everywhere. These chunks of sulfur, brimstone. In the cities of the plain, which destroyed by the rain of fire and brimstone. Now, the interesting thing is science agrees with this, that this was not native to this area, but now we have these chunks of brimstone that have been found. Some people believe that a meteor hit, and then it broke up, you know, broke up the ground into these pieces, so that's why they're finding all of these areas. Now,
If you said anything about space, our asteroids don't have brimstone in them, which is also an interesting piece. But again, brimstone is also sulfur. And those little white areas inside of these rocks are chunks that have hit the ground so hard they've like made their way into the ground. Now, I'm going to take everybody into science class just for a second because I'm trying to build an image. Now, has anybody seen sulfur burn? I hadn't. So let's think about this real quick. Sulfur is a natural substance and it's like in a rock form. As soon as that ignites, it turns into like a blood oil. And in the same moment when it turns into this oil, it almost looks like a honey or like a glaze. That itself self-ignites into fire. Okay? There was a sulfur plant that caught on fire in Wyoming. That's what it looks like. If sulfur is broken up into small pieces, and then ignited, you cannot do anything with that flame. It's like having a liquid gel flame that is then attached to a substance that cannot be put out. And it is just utter destruction. This is just a still image from a video that was taken there at that sulfur plant. And as it burns, you can't stop it, you can't put it out, it just spreads. And if it was done during the daytime, you wouldn't even see the blue flame. It actually burns so hot that the range of light that emanates from it is actually outside of what we can see during the day. But at night, you can see where it's just burning. So imagine God raining brimstone down on this city. To where when it hits and impacts and ignites, there is no putting it out. It is just destroyed. Now, outside of learning a little bit about this area and learning a little bit about sulfur and brimstone, there is also a lot of evidence that at the same time that this happened, that an earthquake may have happened, allowing all of the sulfuric oxide to come up through the ground to also ignite. These are images that have been taken by this geologist group about where sulfur has emanated from the ground and also caught on fire. So when God said that he destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah, this was utterly destroyed. And maybe that's why they haven't been able to find any ruins. Now, everything that I'm putting together today is just based on my research. This group here doing this geology study is not a biblical study. They are just studying what has happened and the impacts of the region. So if you put that study on top of also studying about the idea that God rained down fire and brimstone, if you had these two issues that are dated at the same time frame, if these two issues happened at the same time, there was no fleeing, there was no running. This would have just been, it would have been a furnace. Just destruction. Just like when Abraham looked out over the land and said it would just like smoke from a furnace. Just destroyed. Also, when I was doing this study, just talking about sulfuric acid and the oxide of when it burns, it also removes color. So to prove this, I was watching a science experiment, and a guy put a rose in a glass and lit some sulfur. It instantly removed the color of the rose. Almost like removing the color of rocks. Remember when I showed that image earlier, where I had the image of Egypt and then the image of the Dead Sea, there's two different color of areas. This place has almost been wiped out. Anything. Now, Also, the salt context of the ground, of water, the land around this, even in the plains, it has a very high salt density. Some people believe that when God sent down the fire and brimstone, that it may have hit the waters of the Dead Sea so hard that would have caused waves to go up, putting the salt density into the land, into the water. So basically nothing will ever grow here. So there's a lot of things that happened in this area. All right. So I'm just going to touch on some things real quick. Also, what happened in this area, there is a place called En-Gibeon. I'm going to touch on this real quick, and then I'll hand it over to, we'll finish up the lesson today. So we have this small area right here called En-Gibeon. Now, you may or may not remember this story, but there's an itty-bitty little oasis right in the middle of all of this destruction. So let's take a look about what happened in this area, and this might ring a bell about the story, and then please feel free to take some time to read through this on your own. But let's look in 1 Samuel 23. In 1 Samuel 23 and 28 it says, "Therefore Saul returned from pursuing David and went against the Philistines. So they called the place of the Rock of Escape. And David went up from there to dwell in the strongholds of En-Gibeon." Okay? So then if we were to take that just a little bit further into 24 and 1, it says, "Now it happened when Saul had returned from following the Philistines that it was told to him, saying, 'Take note, David is in the wilderness of En-Gibeon.'" So again, in the middle of the Dead Sea, in the middle of all of this, there's an oasis. This is where David, supposedly, is believed to have fled from Saul, and we've hidden here. This area is full of caves and springs. And if you remember the story, Saul finds David. David cuts off a piece of his clothes to prove of how close he was able to get to him. That would have all happened relative within this area. So I know I touched on a lot of this very quickly. It's a very interesting study. But that would have happened right here at the Dead Sea. These stories kind of unfold here together. This would have been a stronghold because it would have been hard to get in and out of this area. This is a picture of that area. Right here where all these palm trees are. That would have been a very watered area. Now, there wouldn't be very much life in that area, but there was fresh water. It would have been a place for David and his followers to escape to. But as of today, just in the close with the lesson, I think I'd mentioned this each time that I'd been over there. I'd mentioned that talking to the locals and the people over there in Jerusalem, nobody over there has this idea that Jesus didn't really come here. They have all of this proof. They have all of these ideas. Even a lot of the Jewish tour guides that I had believe Jesus really came to earth and did the things that he did. But it was whether you believe that he came here and died for the remission of our sins is the difference. So this morning, I always like to extend the invitation and mention about all of the things that we discussed today and all the things that we looked at today. Do we believe that these things are true, the things that happened in the Bible, to think about what Jesus did for us? If you do and would like to become a child of God, please come forward as we stand and sing the song that's been selected.